So a couple Svarim, whose names are taken from Parshas Va'era. Parshas Va'era, unlike Parshas Va'ichi, even Parshas Shmos, doesn't offer immediate names associated with Svarim. This Parsha describes primarily the Makos, the afflictions and the lessons that were directed at the Mitzrayim. But there are a couple interesting words that if lifted from the Parsha and applied, they can describe some very interesting svarim, and I'll start in chronological order. When the experience, I don't like to call them plagues because it really is so much more than punitive, but that's a whole different conversation. But when these events that we call makos start, the first one is dam. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe emor el Aaron kach matcha unetei yadcha al meimei Mitzrayim al naharasam al yorehem. V'al agmehem v'al kol mikvei memehem. So maybe I'll start to make it purely chronologically with the phrase Mate Moshe. So Moshe takes the staff and performs many of the makos. So the Mate Moshe was a sefer written by a 16th century Talmud of the Maharshal. The Maharshal lived in Lublin. Maharshal is known primarily for, on the one hand, a lot of important svarim, the Am Shel Shlomo, the Hagos Marshal on Shas, but that's probably his most long-lasting, impactful sefer, that the current Vilna edition is based on all of the emendations and alterations of the Marshal, Rav Shlomo Luria. And we barely notice, but every day we learn a Blat Gemara, we're essentially walking down the path that the Marshal paved, because there's so many different additions to Shas, and what was accurate, what was inaccurate, we'll talk about this a little bit later, another sefer that worked very assiduously, trying to rectify the perfect manuscript, or the perfect, or the original authentic text. In any event, the Talmud of the Maharshal was of Moshe Mat, 16th century, and he wrote a sefer called Mate Moshe, a sefer of halacha, and this, for some reason, is a sefer that got very good reviews. It was very authoritative. It's quoted a lot by the Magen Avraham. It's quoted a lot by the Mishneh Berurah. So the sefer that we don't know too much about the chaber of the sefer, but sefer has become almost promoted and lent authoritative level because it's quoted by so many svarim that we then see as primary sifrei psak, in particular the Magen Avraham, the Pri Megadim, and of course very often by the Mishneh Berurah. So I'll just mention one very well-known psak, well, not well-known, but one interesting psak of the Mate Moshe, that he was one of the first achronim that allowed doctors to perform internal surgery on internal diseases. Namely, there's always a healthy question in our Masara whether doctors should or shouldn't be healing. Mara says, Mikan shenitan reshus l'rofe l'rapo, so the rofe has the permission. It sounds like it's a ambivalent allowance, but there's an Ibn Ezra, for example, that claims that a rofe should just deal with external symptoms and those illnesses that are externally visible, but the internal illnesses and internal factors shouldn't be addressed by surgeons or by doctors. That should be left in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Keep in mind that this is parallel to advances, significant advances in the 16th century in Europe, in Germany, and primarily in Germany, and in Italy, in which surgery was becoming, internal surgery and dissection, was becoming very common and very popular, and learning how to deal with gunshot wounds on the battlefield in particular, because people were starting to use gunpowder and bullets. And so it's a very interesting development and general interest in anatomy. So this psak of the Mate Moshe, that a doctor is allowed to deal with not just external medical symptoms and medical responses, but even internal factors, and it doesn't contradict our reliance upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is very much a psak of the time. It's very much a period psak. So now I'm leaping ahead from the early 16th century to the late 16th century. And from the Polish area, there's the Talmud of the Maharshal in Lublin. So from Central Europe all the way to Western Europe. to an interesting personality named Menashe, or Rav Menashe ben Yisrael. And the reason I'm speaking about him is because one of his svarim is a sefer named Mikveh Yisrael, and the pasuk describes that the waters of Mitzrayim were transformed into blood, no matter where the waters were. Al Meimei Mitzrayim, Al Naharosam, Al Yarehem, V'al Akmehem, V'al Kol, Mikveh Meimehem. So the word Mikveh, or Mikveh, appears in this week's parasha. So this is the early part of the 17th century. Menashe ben Yisrael, Rav Menashe ben Yisrael, a Portuguese rabbi, ultimately moves to Holland, so he's better known for his life in Holland. His family were part of the emigres from the Portuguese Inquisition, so they lived in Portugal, actually in an island near Portugal, and they had to leave and they resettled in Amsterdam. Now, because of certain financial challenges, at a certain point in the early part of the 17th century, in the late 1620s, he forms the first Hebrew printing press in Amsterdam. So this is the 1620s. Printing presses have been around about 100 years, but they're very expensive and easily afforded. Of course, they print in English, not necessarily in Hebrew. So he forms a printing press, and he's responsible for printing Hebrew Svarim for the first time in Amsterdam. Anyway, he's a very well-rounded person. There's a lot of Talmidim. Probably his most notorious Talmud is Baruch Spinoza. He knew 10 languages, and the fact that he knew so many languages and he was so broad-minded put him in contact with a lot of external sources and a lot of relationships and interactions, not just with the Jews, but with many leaders. He was a more of a public figure, not just a local Rav. His Sefer, the one he's most well known for, is called Sefer Machria. Many people listening to this year maybe are familiar with the Sefer Machria of the Telsa Sarid, which is an analysis of Gemara. But this is the Sefer Machria, which was published in 1640, 1644, and it was written in a foreign language. And essentially, he was writing to people that had vast exposure to Christianity. Remember, his family itself, his own family, they were conversos. They were children of people that were forced to convert to Christianity. So there's a certain part of him that wants to write a sefer to people that have Christian exposure. And it's essentially a sefer responding to biblical criticism, to psukim in the Torah that seem to contradict one another. And it's not primarily a sefer directed at Jews, and it was translated to many, many different languages, and essentially gave him great international prestige and put him into a lot of interaction with a lot of well-known leading Christian scholars, as well as Christian noblemen, as well as kings and queens, as well as Rembrandt, the artist who actually produced an image of Rabbi Menashe ben Yisrael. So this is an interesting personality. He's not just writing Svarim for Jewish consumption, but he's writing Svarim about the Torah that receive worldwide attention. Now, what's interesting also about his particular experience is that later on in his life, in the 1650s, so in England now, there's a great debate whether to release or to remove the exile of the Jews, the ban on Jews living in England, that had lasted for close to 400 years, since 1290. And he's invited by Cromwell as the representative of the Jewish people to make the case for Judaism, to defend Judaism against the classic accusations of Christianity. And he writes a sefer, or his discussions to try to defend Judaism become one of the great apologetics of Judaism. It's a literary genre of svarim written to defend Judaism against the attacks. And what's fascinating is that he sees a pasuk in Yeshaya, Perek Samach Vav, as a prophecy for the Jewish return to England. Pasuk in Yeshaya talks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu redeeming the Jewish people and gathering all the exiles. V'samti bohem os, v'shilachti mehem pleitim el hagoyim, tarshish pul velud, moshche keshes, ha'iyim harachokim, and even the far-off islands that don't know of me, ha'loshem u'ashemi, v'lo es kivodi, v'higidu es kivodi bagoyim. They will realize my glory. So the fact that Jews are being welcomed back into England by Cromwell in the early mid part of the 17th century into these far off islands. Remember, for people who aren't geographically attuned, England is an island. So he sees this as the return to the island of England. And part of it, he writes a sefer called Teshuas Yisrael, which was written in Latin originally, and he dedicates it to the British Parliament. So essentially, he's someone that's well-known rabbi, Portuguese rabbi, but his impact is felt more outside of the Jewish population, or certainly for the Jews who are interested in having an impact outside the Jewish population, and less in terms of writing Svarim internally. Unfortunately, he dies before all this has any impact. He dies in 1657, but in 1664, Jews are granted official protection, and in 1698, so this is about 40 years after he dies, all of a sudden Judaism is validated or legalized in England because of his efforts. So in terms of the Svarim, again, Mikveh Yisrael is probably the sefer that is most related to Parshas Vayera, but some of the other Svarim are not, as I said before, not classic Svarim, but Svarim written to try to present Judaism to the broader world, and a world which is very often hostile. The third sefer I wanted to mention, which relates to Parshas Vayera, is of course a very well-known sefer, and a sefer written by someone who dominated Central European / German Judaism during the 18th century. And this is the sefer called Kresi Uplesi. Now the tie-in to Parshas Vayera is when Hashem delivers the Makkah of Arov. So Hashem announces that the gangs of wild beasts will affect all of Egypt and their slave houses and their homes and the homes of the Egyptians and the entire territory, the entire terrain. V'heflesi v'yam ha'utz eretz Goshen. But I will distinguish the land of Goshen where my people are, and there won't be any animals there. So the word v'heflesi is found in Parshas Vayera. So who was Rav Yonos and Eibeshitz? Well, who wasn't he? I mean, very well-rounded personality. He was a Rav, he was a Darshan, he was a Talmud Chacham, he was a Mekubal, probably one of the leading, if not the, one of the leading personalities of Ashkenaz Jewry in the 18th century, first half of the 18th century. Most well-known for his debate, not his debate, but being accused by Rav Yaakov Emden of being a Sabbatian sympathizer, primarily because of amulets that he wrote. And when he was the rabbi in Hamburg, he wrote these amulets primarily for women who were having complications during childbirth, which was leading to a lot of death of childbearing women. And when Yaakov Emden, who wasn't really a rabbi, but he well-known and also broad-based and broad-educated, and when he saw some of the writings in these amulets, remember the Shabtai Tzvi was a movement in the 17th century, and it was a movement based on Kabbalah, and is a movement that led to a lot of heartache in the Jewish world and a lot of frustration. Shabtai Tzvi was revealed to be a fraud, and he converted to Islam. And even though in 1666 Shabtai Tzvi was deposed or his movement was discontinued, the aftershocks and the tremors of the Sabbatian movement were still felt throughout the 18th century. Throughout Central Europe, but certainly in Germany, because of the accusations against Rav Yonos and Eibeshitz. Keep in mind that our tradition always had it that Rav Yaakov Emden was on a witch hunt and Rav Yonos and Eibeshitz was not a Sabbatian. Some modern scholarship has suggested that indeed he did have Sabbatian tendencies. Some of that scholarship was produced by a well-known Jewish thinker who wrote a lot about Kabbalah and Hasidus called Gershon Shalom. So a lot of the modern scholarship about Kabbalah has once again revived the notion. Anyway, so a little bit about Yonos and Eibeshitz. Yonos and Eibeshitz was a descendant of two, or his family was, and he personally remarried into the family. I don't remember offhand, but he certainly was associated with two very, very prominent Kabbalistic families. One is the Ari HaKadosh, and one is Reb Zalman Shapira, Reb Natan Shapira, excuse me, who was a sefer of the Megala Mukos. So he certainly had that Kabbalah pedigree. His family is born in Czechoslovakia, and that's the name Eibeshitz. Is a town in Czechoslovakia where I think his father was the Rav. But certainly he migrates over to some of the larger towns. He's in Prague, then he moves to Metz, then he moves to Hamburg. So he's associated more with
not the Czech Republic, but a little bit more of the larger cities in Poland or ultimately in France and Germany. He had a lot of interactions with Christian contemporaries of his days. In that respect, he shares some things in common with Menashe ben Yisrael. In 1741, what happens is because of his contact with Christians, especially when he's the rabbi in Prague, he leads to the publication of the Talmud in Prague. Now remember, Talmud was not allowed to be published in lands controlled by the Pope. And Prague was, of course, in those days controlled by the Vatican. And this was a real anomaly to have a Shas published, but it could only be published if some of the more caustic elements of Shas, specifically vis-a-vis Christianity and Christian belief, were amended. So there's a lot of emendations and omissions and smoothing over, and there's a lot of debate about whether the Shas should be published or shouldn't be published. And I don't remember if the full Shas was published, but he's right in the middle of that debate. It's a scholarly debate, not about him, about whether Shas should be published if portions have to be amended. Anyway, so in 1741, he's born in 1694, so he's now 45, France conquers Prague, and he then becomes the chief rabbi in a very large French town called Metz. And he replaces someone who was the previous rabbi in Metz, having moved from Prague, the Panei Yeshua. And he's actually seen as a traitor by the people in Prague because he joins the conquering force, the French. Anyway, he's now a rabbi of an even larger French town. The French were the conquerors of the Czech Republic of the Central European republics. And he's very concerned about the defection, about people going off the derech, and he believes, which is interesting, why do people go off the derech? Is it philosophy? Is it hedonism? Is it... Yes. He felt that they just didn't know enough, and they didn't know enough halachos. So he writes a kitzer, Hilchos Shabbos in Yiddish, for German and French, French Jews who spoke Yiddish, to read and just become familiar with Hilchos Shabbos. And he feels that this will help them stay on the derech, as we would say. Then he becomes the rabbi in Hamburg and the outlying towns, Altoona. This is probably one of the top five or six Ashkenazic rabbinic positions in the 18th century. And of course, the controversy breaks out, a controversy which really cast the pall over much of Ashkenazic German Jewry for the latter part of the 18th century, about whether he was or wasn't a Sabbateanist. Now, interestingly enough, the only Sefer written in his lifetime, I say this interestingly enough because many times he tried to find opportunities, rabbinic positions that would allow him to print this Sefer. We don't identify with this. If we have a Sefer to print, we've got opportunities at the very least online. There are cheaper publishing houses available, but printing presses are still very expensive and you need subsidies, and he's spent a lot of his life trying to find opportunities to print this Sefer. And there are many Sefer, of course, that we read of his, the Yaris Devash, probably one of the more famous ones, Musar and Machshava, the Urim V'Tumim, which is written in Chosh Mishpat. I'm teaching now Cheskas Havatim, and I'm quoting the Urim V'Tumim, third paragraph of Abbasar, quite frequently. But the only Sefer published in his life is the Sefer Crazy Vaplesi, 1763, which is his parish on Yerodea. Crazy Plesi is one of the nicknames of the Urim V'Tumim, or of the Sanhedrin, in the Beis HaMikdash. And this is really the only Sefer that is published before he passes, and all the other Sefer Svarim are published posthumously after he passes. So these are three interesting Svarim and the personalities behind the Svarim that are linked to Parshas Vayera. The Sefer Mate Moshe by Rav Moshe Mat, the Talmud of the Maharshal. The Sefer Mikveh Yisrael, which is written by Rav Menashe ben Yisrael, a Portuguese rabbi of the 17th century that had a lot of interaction with the broader non-Jewish world. And of course the Sefer Crazy Uplesi, written by Bionis and Ibishitz, probably one of the more controversial figures of the 18th century.